November 4th. It's Anarchy Radio. It was 95 today in New Delhi, India, leaving tomorrow.
Stop gloating.
Oh, I do hate to leave the cold, rainy weather, but somebody's got to do it. And let's see. Kari will be here a week from tonight, and in 2 weeks, Danielle, and they may have guests. I know there'll be some guests with these guest hosts. Let's see, what else? Oh, at the break, midway through tonight's show, we're going to have Sarah is going to drop by from Finland, who just got here from Finland. She'll be very jet-lagged, and I'll just, you know, pump questions at her and get her more confused. And Cricket, my good friend Cricket, they're going to drop in about halfway through. Let's see. Well, y'all know what the big news is. You've all been waiting for this, and so I'm going to disclose it right now. There was no riot on Halloween. Friday night, there was no riot at all here in Eugene, here near the mighty campus. But somebody did throw a whiskey bottle at passing cops, so I can report that. Last week, I mentioned early on the jump in the suicide rate in the past few years in the U.S., especially among middle-aged women. Today, I saw something from the U.N., Mirella Zanthaki, I don't know what country she's from, but she represents the UN. She points out that there are 2 suicides per second on this great globe of ours, 1 million suicides per year. I had no idea there were 1 million a year. And this suicide crisis is somehow absent from national agendas. Oh, hey, that reminds me, there was an election today. Speaking of being absent from reality here, what can you say? I'm not going to waste a lot of time on this, quite frankly, but one thing, well, let's see. Here's something. This is Sunday New York Times, big splashy thing, the year of living on the edge of our seats, a campaign alive with passions and blah, blah, blah. Huh, on the edge of our seats, is it? Well, it's It has overwhelmed things. I heard this morning that the only story on morning news in Mexico, in terms of Mexican national media across the board, was the U.S. election. Nothing else. Nothing else is happening at all. And I note, this is a really interesting story from the MIT paper called The Tech, characteristically enough, special to The Tech, a 3-part interview with Professor Noam Chomsky. This is the part that I love. He's talking about the election. He's talking about, in this regard, here he's talking about McCain, and I quote, "McCain is supposed to be a specialist on national security issues." Then he goes on to say, well, he got shot down. That's about it. And he says, well, we might feel sorry for him, but does that make him an expert on national security? Well, first of all, that just kind of amazes me. Not that I could be much amazed anymore at Chomsky, but, well, first of all, I don't feel sorry for part of the effort to murder millions of people in Southeast Asia, for somebody who bombed people from 20,000 feet. I don't feel sorry that he got shot down. And the other part, taking up the point, he's supposed to be a specialist on national security issues, but is he? Well, is that the point for an anarchist? For example, I don't want cops to be experts. I don't want them to be smart, smarter than me, more tuned in. I want them to be stupid. If you are so interested in the national security, how could you conceivably call yourself an anarchist? That's you're some Republican or Democrat or something. That's just unbelievable. Well, again, it's not unbelievable. And there are anarchists who vote, and this is just a tiresome quadrennial thing, even more often than that, actually. And Chucko in Kansas City said about the number of people this time who are, quote, anarchists and who are voting. Well, there are a lot more anarchists. There's a lot of people new to that point of view, however you define it. And so they don't know. And, you know, there's something to that. I'm sure maybe they haven't thought about it. But what I like is just the definition of what anarchy means, without rule, smash the state, you know, stuff like that. And I love it how people, there are always a lot of people who, if you point that out, if you point out the glaring inconsistency or contradiction, they'll say, who are you to define what X and Y is? Who are you to say, well, it's not somebody's opinion. It's the meaning of words in the most general sense of what the terms define and what, you know, it's not my opinion or somebody else's opinion. You could say, this somebody is a monarchist or a Nazi, and they say, well, there's no contradiction with anarchy. Who are you to say? Well, anyway, you get the point. The only thing I can say maybe is, at least the potential thing here. Last time there were this many voters as a percentage and as a turnout as the way it's looking today was the 60s. And of course, what happened in the 60s had nothing to do with, in any direct sense, voting or the people that were elected. Certainly not. I mean, they became the enemies of the movement rather quickly. LBJ, you ever heard of him? The good old war maker. And so maybe there's, with all this idealism, which I cannot conceive of what it's based on, when you look at what Obama is all about and how he scarcely differs from McCain even on almost anything, and that they both agree that it's a good idea to spend $1 billion to keep the range of thought and discussion to an amazing tight non-reality. But, you know, again, there could be, maybe there's something in the air that has to do with something else that would be interesting. It's possible. It is possible. Well, I'm going to get into some action news. Maybe this would be some good kind of antidote type of stuff to the embarrassment of today. Let's see. In northern Peru, 24 indigenous communities. This is about this is recent. This is about 10 days ago. They've issued a stern ultimatum to the Canadian oil exploration company Talisman Energy, warning them that they have until November 15th to withdraw from their communities, or they'll have no choice but to force them out. In western Brazil, an estimated 120 members of the Anahuine Nahue tribe, in an effort to protect the Uruguayana River, that's possibly the way it's pronounced, they occupied the construction site of a hydroelectric dam on the 13th and then burned it to the ground. And 12 trucks were also destroyed, along with a number of offices and company housing units. Last Tuesday, while this very program is going on, it sounds like, a bank was burned in Thessalonica. Could be those Greek anarchists. Two Molotovs were hurled inside the bank, causing material damage. Last Wednesday night, a recruitment center was damaged. Two large cinder blocks in the front door. Second time the area has been hit in the last 3 months. It's the second time in 3 months since this particular Lacey recruitment center, which is right near Olympia, has been targeted. And police wonder if this vandalism might be connected to a similar recent case at the Thurston County Democrats building downtown Olympia. And something kind of surprising and underreported, there are tens of thousands of people in Italy in various cities on the march. There's certain occupations movement. It's a student rebellion's been spreading in opposition to the government's plans to shrink the funding of the university system and privatize some of it, I understand. Greenpeace, their boat, the Rainbow Warrior, has been trying to block the King's North coal-fired power plant in England. This is the UK power plant. And this came after something I mentioned with glee a little while ago, that the jury acquitted Greenpeace protesters who had vandalized the same plant and its smokestack. The court ruled that the activists were acting in the public interest because the power plant will cause property destruction in the future due to its release of climate-changing greenhouse gases. Well, more than property destruction, that's for sure. Okay, ALF news in Lelystad, Holland. This is the kind of thing that's happening more and more. Apparently, ALF visited the home of Fred G. Van Zilderveld, destroyed his car, really messed up his car, and painted the walls of his house with murderer and animal killer, and their communique says there is no excuse for killing animals in labs. Those who are responsible will be attacked very hard by ALF. No vivisector in the Netherlands will be safe. In Botswana, in the central Kalahari Game Reserve, the diamond company De Beer had announced it will no longer pursue mining or exploration activities. This is an important victory for the resistance on the part of the Kaikani Kweni, the first peoples of the Kalahari, who were, of course, looked down as backward and inferior by the government and the corporations. Friday night, Halloween night, there was quite a party, an Olympia Halloween dance party. Very quickly got even more interesting. The U.S. bank had its windows broken out, and as the music played, people took off and broke out the windows of a Starbucks, and then they came back and broke more windows at the U.S. bank. No one was arrested. Everyone stayed safe. Modesto Republican headquarters was attacked. Two railroad spikes were thrown through the window, and they didn't catch anyone for that either. Well, that was not the only one. Woodland, California Republican headquarters was attacked. A lead flower pot through the windows, latest vandalism there. This was on the weekend. And Friday, another Friday one, Kansas City Democratic Party headquarters attacked again a second time in a week. Windows smashed there. Graffiti included false hope, social war, bricks through the windows. Here's some big news, and apparently some people are waiting to see if this is really verified or verifiable. Sounds like it is. Four people have stepped forward to become the spokespersons of the North American Earth Liberation Front. They've opened a press office in Washington, D.C. Earth Liberation Front press office returns. This was announced Friday. And that's very admirable. In Peru, in five provinces, this is the middle of last week, people are upset about taxation and corruption, and they have threatened politicians. They set a police station on fire, and that is quite possibly still going on. In Quebec, the largest fur farm up in Quebec, 3,000 mink were released. And they also destroyed the pedigree cards, without which, even if they round up the mink, it won't do them any good because they don't have, that's what carries the genetic information in terms of their breeding, their forced domestication policy. I wanted to mention this. This really shows, I think, the spread of certain ideas. November 11th and 12th in Chicago, Questioning Progress. This is a gathering of Christian anarcho-primitivists, Christian anarcho-primitivists, green anarchists, and civilization skeptics. So that's a two-day event there. Yeah. And on the same day that the first ever Anarchist Book Fair in Los Angeles will be held in South Central LA December 13th. On that same day, the first Humboldt Anarchist Book Fair will be held in Arcata. Christiana, there was rioting last Tuesday. They're trying to defend Christiana, and whenever the government tries to move in terms of evictions, there is rioting in Denmark. Another announcement here in Santa Cruz. Well, this took place on Saturday, on the first grand opening event of Sub Rosa. Sounds like a very ambitious new community space sounds like pretty elaborate with a whole lot of activities and services, and that's good news. Skillshare, Radical Botany number 7, and I'm referring to Portland Indie Media. You can find this. This is the seventh. This is kind of the seventh report. It's in the form of an essay, and they're talking about activities that go on there too. I just want to quote this part of it. It's called The Great Harvest. In ancient times, before humans began to cultivate plants, there's much evidence that the tribal people of Cascadia nurtured, and they talk about all of the various things that grew wild here. And that's always worth checking out. It's wonderful to see when they have a new exploration, a new study, if you will. Dry River, this weekend, the 7th, 8th, and 9th, that's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, whole bunch of activities. The Dry River Collective there in Tucson celebrating their third anniversary. Lots of bands, all kinds of events, potlucks, and movies, and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, Dry River. They're strong, and they've been there 3 years, looking good. Well, that's, I don't want to, I could, well, one more thing. Cineland, which is a film project, film outfit in New York, Kelly Loudenberg by name, she is going to be doing, I think this is pretty much set, a few minutes worth of a documentary on the Pink House in Baltimore, apropos of interest in anarcho-primitivism. Good to hear that. Good to hear more. Ooh, we get the phone call ring. Okay, the what seems to be never-ending in some of the latest industrialism news, been continuing for weeks now, is the melamine thing in China and the industrial chemical that they've added to a lot of food supplies. Global recalls have been happening in terms of Chinese dairy products and a lot of other things. Tainted animal feed now seems to be just spreading. It seems to be the name of the game, not just some small thing. Lots of metals. This is a new thing from The Guardian in the UK. Just came out a couple of days ago. The amazing levels of metals like copper and manganese in both red and white wines. Some of the most well-known countries involved. France has the worst in terms of hazardous metals. You know, I wanted to, let me see, what have I got here for the ad of the week? I want to not forget to do this when we get to talking a little later. This is a great one. Maybe some of you know Toms of Maine. They make sort of hippie, well, maybe that's not the right word, toothpaste and stuff like that, and deodorant. Here is their watchword, quote, if you want to create change, change your deodorant. That's a great one. Can you spell Eugene? But actually, it's Toms of Maine. And I saw this strange ad. New York Times is, they have full-page ads, I think, almost every day for expensive watches. Here's, they have a virtual reality ad. It's the first one I've ever seen. You go to the website, The Watch Avenue, and I don't know even what the name of the brand is, but it's this interactive thing. It's not especially slick, but... Oh, those are sort of the ads of the week, I guess. And, you know, I've been reading in the science and tech pages here and there about when your computer is turned off, how long it takes to boot it up. How long? Here's a piece from Sunday. 30 seconds to boot up? That's 29 too many. Yeah, we're like rats on a wheel. I mean, we're so at ease in the world. You can't even sit there for 30 seconds to wait for the stupid computer to get going. You've got to keep racing. You can't, you're losing, you're not working, or whatever it is. That's, when you think about it, that's how fast everything gets kind of redefined. Or anyway, big story about kidney stones. This is killer. Kidney stones in kids. This is a U.S. story. Of course, it has a lot to do with the childhood obesity epidemic. People who sit there staring at the screens, I guess they were, maybe if it came on faster in a second instead of 30 seconds, they wouldn't, old men get kidney stones, not kids, as one of these doctors says in this piece. Sedentary kids, they're not in nature, they're not moving much, and now they're getting all these diseases. In a study here, Zoloft helps kids with anxiety, and they're talking about what treatments work, but the point here in this piece is anxiety disorders affect as many as 20% of U.S. children and teens. Obsessive compulsive disorders and all that sort of thing. And this is another thing that's connected here. This is from the Daily Mail, the UK newspaper, the Daily Mail. This is a study from England, but I'd be surprised if it just doesn't apply quite a lot to U.S. kids. How the brain power of today's 14-year-olds has slipped radically in just one generation. Intellectual ability to think through anything is way down, and right away they say it's the rise of computer games and also overtesting in school, where they're just drilling kids. That's the one, no child left behind is what they call it here. Anyway, it's pretty alarming that you can't deal with complex anything. And this is a comparison to 1976, so actually that's quite a, you know, it's like 30 years. But dramatic slumps in any way you measure that, apparently. And the number of kids on meds, this is a much more narrow time frame. From 2002 to 2005, the number of kids on pharmas, on different kinds of meds, has jumped enormously. Again, diabetes, 103% increase, and they go down the list, asthma, ADD, cholesterol, an important point here, these are drugs that many are taking for the rest of their lives. This isn't like you take an antibiotic for a few days and the biggest increase, this is U.S. kids, biggest increase for drug use was seen in girls. The gender gap was most striking in terms of diabetic conditions. Number of boys taking meds in that sense grew 39%. The number of girls using them climbed by 147%. Okay. Well, maybe we'll just hang for just a minute and play a little bit of music, and I think our friends are coming up. We got more stuff. Here's one today, Grotesquely Deformed Amphibians. More of that, frogs and salamanders, other creatures like that have six or seven legs, and it probably has something to do with poisoning the planet. It's just a guess there. They're going way out on a limb with that one. And this is something that was just today. This is just kind of a goofy little thing, sad but true. CBS, the television network, today they're breaking out a line of, this is called Social Viewing Room, and it's people watching CBS programs alone on their laptops, on their computers. And they can be online to share, can talk about the shows. So, social viewing room. Well, social? They're alone. That's not social. And viewing room? But they're not in a room together. They're isolated. And they're just, I mean, it's, as Carol was pointing out, the family or, you know, whoever it is sitting there staring at the tube, that's bad enough. But now you get the next refinement of that. And the kids thing, I've noted this, I've mentioned it, in Nebraska, they passed a law telling people that they could drop off their kids rather than harm coming to them, rather than finding infants in the dumpsters, that sort of thing. They have dropped any kind of penalties. You cannot be prosecuted for leaving off a child at wherever, hospital or police station or wherever. Well, and they've been finding more and more teenagers, even 17-year-olds. Yeah, it's like every day there's more. Wow. Two more kids. This is today. Two more kids left in Nebraska hospitals. both 16. You know, that's not
if
what...
If you don't behave...
The state is taking you over. I'm going to drop you off now. Yeah, so they're reconsidering this law, this safe haven law. They're rewriting it. They're quickly... And people from other states. I mean, it's not funny. It's just how healthy the culture
the
really is.
Of legislation.
Isn't that great? Yeah, they've been abandoning kids. This is a good idea. We won't get into trouble. Kids such a pain in the butt. Well, there's a lot of... I thought somebody was coming in.
Yeah. we should take a break.
We should take a break. Let's play some music. Maybe they'll show up by soon.
The tango scene has been pushing the limits both socially and politically since the genesis of tango when it began in the brothels of Buenos Aires, Argentina. Today, worldwide, a new evolvement is occurring through the creativity of tango DJs who are pushing back the boundaries of their music. A movement of what is known as alternative tango is flourishing. On Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m., I'll give you a taste of music that is what I consider tango-worthy, playing everything from electronic, jazz, opera, and maybe even a bit of traditional tango now and then. Join me on Thursday afternoons as I evoke the drive, passion, and beauty that inspires tango dancers here in Eugene, as well as thriving tango venues worldwide.
Jack Michaels was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam. He was shot down just before he was to return home. When he was sent to a hospital for rehabilitation, Paralyzed Veterans of America was there to help him rebuild his life.
PVA is the only veterans organization that really seemed to understand what a paraplegic or quadriplegic is going through. They showed me that it was possible to live and to flourish.
Paralyzed Veterans of America, continuing to serve.
For more information, call 1-866-USA-4-PVA.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWVA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Oh, we're back. That was some very dramatic Holst there, the music on the break. I wanted to stick in one more, and then we're going to just kick back with Sarah and Cricket. Interview today with Stuart Pym, who's an extinction specialist, I guess you'd say, or a scientist who concentrates on this. He says, among other things, about 1% of all species on the planet are in such trouble that they'll be gone in the next decade unless something drastic happens. And I mentioned predictable responses to things. You could just kind of catalog these things. The next question is, what can one person do to stop extinctions? I mean, that's just so—it's just so full of. I mean, the assumption couldn't be more clear. I would say, what can one? I mean, that's assuming, you know, that it's just a matter of personal consumption. I guess would be one way, probably the most obvious way to read that. And he just ignores it, which is better than you can do more recycling. Just don't think about the whole vast, systematic, structural, institutional thing. No, just think about what one person can do, which will make no difference at all. You know, so he has the sense to just pretend that that wasn't the question. It goes on in the stuff about endangered animals, but it could be better. But that's just an ideological question. You know, what can one person? And you know, I noticed, by the way, the U of O bookstore here, their section, I think it's called, well, it's, they've changed the titles, but it's ecology, civic engagement, stuff like that. You look at those shelves, and almost every single book is 50 ways you can save the planet. You know, there's a million of these books, and that's the limit of it. It's just, again, it's like the election. There's no, the parameters are so constricted that there's only one way to think about it. You ignore just the gigantic 99% of it, and think of what you can do without thinking, kind of thing. Anyway. Hey, Sarah. Good to see you. I'm glad you're here. You just got here from Finland 2 days ago or yesterday?
Yeah, 2 days ago.
Terrific.
Yeah.
It's good to see you here. Thanks for dropping by.
Yeah, thank you.
You were at something else, you and Cricket here in the, on campus just this evening?
Yeah, we went to listen to this presentation of Beehive Collective, which is like a graphic designers making these posters for some campaigns, and that was pretty interesting.
Where are they from?
They're from Maine.
Oh,
yeah.
From Maine. Okay.
Yeah, they're based in Maine, but they said that they're all over the place, and they said that some of them are down in, I guess, Latin America right now, collecting stories and interviews for some of their pieces. It seemed like it was very much participatory, based on a lot of people's voices down there coming through in this, in these art pieces.
Well, you know, we were featuring Toms of Maine earlier, ad of the week. You know, Tom, toothpaste and everything. If you want to create change, change your deodorant. That was so good I had to say it again, because you missed it. Anyway, Maine. Anyway, Was it a good turnout? Good interaction going on with the thing?
Yeah, yeah. It was, good. You know, there was maybe 30 people. It's still going on right now. We mm-hmm. might go to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the end. I guess this is the third piece of art that they've created of the series that deals with globalization and colonialization. And it seems like the art really tells the stories, the roots of a lot of these struggles. They go back historically, you know, to the colonization of, you know, from Spain and other countries. Yeah.
Great. Well, Sarah, I bet you wish you were a citizen so you could be voting today on this historic day, on this marvelous...
no way.
Blessed day. No way. All right. Excellent. Well, you know, I wanted to... I don't really know how to put this. I just thought of this, you know, in a quite general way. But, and of course, you were there for the month of August, speaking of Finland cricket. I had such a great time there, just so briefly. The June before last, it was just great. I love your friends.
Yeah, they're great.
And it seems like there's kind of a lot going on. And you know, we were talking about the skills thing, the primitive skills, reskilling, and by the way, I don't know what it is. I don't know how long this is going to keep going, but my impression, it just seems like since the last show or two, and my cousin Catherine and I talked about this 2 weeks ago, it seems like it's so much in the air. It really does. Unless it's just a pure coincidence, I'm running into people or hearing about things and visitors and stuff. But so it's pretty strong there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's fun and.
You know, it was good to hear when we spoke earlier this afternoon. I had been sort of on the trail of what happened in July in Poland with the primitivist gathering there. It was so good to get your read on that, because I had a positive reaction from everybody, but almost no details. So you know people that were there, certainly, huh?
Yeah, yeah, I know some people who were there, and that's true. Like they were very positive about it, and making new connections with people and some new projects also, and yeah.
And you were saying. And this is something I didn't know at all, that there was an emphasis on trying to really advance the relationships and the way the people there relate. Is that's true?
Yeah,
that
that's true. Yeah. I got the impression that they were really learning to know each other and, like, really learning to, yeah, how to communicate, how to be honest. I think honesty was one of their main things, like, yeah. And I think they also, some people who came back from there, they still had it with them, like, really, like, a good experience there, and to share it now with other people also.
Gee, oh, yeah. great.
Yeah, that's great, I think that, yeah, it's not only for, like, couple of months in some other place, but to share everything.
Gee, they come back with that strong sense of that, huh? Do you think that's somehow connected to anarcho-primitivism or primitive skills or that sort of thing? Or is it just a separate thing that's a wonderful thing to have too? Is there some kind of link that you could see?
Well, yeah, of course, I think they're connected. Like, you cannot create a community without trust or honesty. And I think you need a community or people you really trust, friends and stuff like that, for, like, really practicing some kind of new stuff, like skills or I don't know.
Gee, like, yeah, that sounds great. I mean, band society. As people have thought about this and developed this, and also witnessed it, when you are in a situation where society is 50 or 100 people, you're taking responsibility for each other.
Yeah, exactly.
And for yourself. And,
yeah.
And so I guess you'd have to have kind of a new ethic. Mm-hmm. It's not like mass society. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe that too would be drastically different, I guess.
Yeah.
What do you think, Cricket?
Oh, I was just thinking of my various experiences in Finland and just just some of the literature that was available there.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking specifically of the Thai cuisine, and just how it was really nice to see that just going strong, this pretty much green anarchist, you know, you were wondering if it was primitivist influenced. It seemed like it was very much a green anarchist publication there that's thick and full of articles, and going strong, and with translations and
yeah.
pieces from you, John.
Oh, oh, maybe I'll get a chance to see that. Yeah. You know, I just saw this like yesterday. This strikes me as kind of the opposite, and this is a book I haven't got a hold of yet. But this is from I think this is the Harvard Magazine, a new book. Who is the author? Anyway, the title of this book is Blown to Bits, Your Life, Liberty, and Happiness After the Digital Explosion. Oh, this is a lecture. Anyway, sounds like there you have the two directions, or, you know, what happens in the technoculture to human relations and, you know, that experience of being with each other, and whether it's more and more totally mediated, or in the case of these things, not mediated at all. I know you haven't been here long enough to see much, but and you're going to be around here for a while?
Yeah, I will, for at least 2 months.
Terrific. That's good for us. What are you doing? Passing notes here?
No, there's a whole list of.
No, I just wrote some stuff down.
Good. Well, I'm gonna be on vacation from this, and I miss the show, and I'm not doing it. And it's great to get to talk to people. It's when I'm lucky enough to have guests, and let them have a few words.
Yeah.
If they happen to grab the mic. Oh, by the way, well, we did have a couple of calls off air here, but I practically always forget this, but 346-0645-541, 346-0645, if anybody wants to call who didn't happen to know the phone number here. Well, it's great to see, and, you know, I was glad that we had the discussion that Catherine and I had. I mean, she was taking up the more critical side of this, you know. I think, safe to say, she's kind of afraid that this could kind of go in a hippie direction where people leave, they withdraw for good reasons, but then the resistance part is lacking. But what I've seen some marvelous examples of people, and our friend Danielle right here is another one I also was just thinking of, who are very active, who really are part of a culture of resistance as well as learning the things that will be necessary to know that, you know, we were skilled so long ago. Well, that varies, of course. I mean, some people are skilled right now, but...
So, was Catherine critical of just worries about the political, primitive skills community sort of becoming sort of depoliticized, or... just more personal lifestyle issues, or
yeah, I think it was that, and the both of us saw the same thing in the '60s. I mean, I'm a little older than she is, but I think I would say I remember being in the Haight-Ashbury, and people were leaving by the hundreds every day, and some of us wanted to defend that quote community, and rather than just let tourism and the cops and everything else run right over it, people just ran out. I mean, they ran out because they wanted to do something, you know, the back to the land, as it's called here, and all that. But those are people who had no interest pretty much ever. I mean, that's, you know, I think it's not unfair to say passivity is a big trait of hippies. You know, they're not part of the, you know, they're not suits, they're not corporate pigs and so forth, obviously. But if you're looking for somebody to stand up against stuff, it's probably not so much hippies, you know, that's a generalization. But, and so I think she was not wanting to see replay of that, these activities are good, but who's going to be left, you know, fighting the fight, in a sense?
I guess my response would be, I guess it's important that you're not sort of, I could use a metaphor, you know, pulling the rug from under yourself or something like that. It seems like if you're going to resist, it seems like it might be easier to resist once you've broken the dependencies upon, you know, the society that you're attempting to either stop or resist. So, I mean, that's sort of a simple answer to a really complicated question. I'm not simply asserting that going out into the woods is going to equal some kind of, you know, revolutionary action, but it does seem like, you know, if you don't know how to feed yourself and you're going to the grocery store every day for your food, that seems to be a dependency and a problem, whereas, you know, if you know how to feed yourself, you don't need to keep coming back into the society looking for food, you mm-hmm. know, from the machine itself. So, I mean, I'm not saying that that's sort of a simplistic answer, and I think that Catherine probably has, a you know, some genuine concerns. So, I would say in some cases being outside of a context of dependency might actually strengthen resistance rather than, you know, depoliticizing it.
Mm-hmm. I think back to these kids from L.A. We got a call, but let me just finish this thought. Back when there was a lot of forest defense, forest resistance, and I think maybe the anarchist thing is coming back in L.A., but anyway, there were kids that were extremely, you know, kind of prone to drugs and nihilism and, you know, tough place. Had a very healing experience, and that word is overused, I realize. And I think they came out of that stronger. And I have no idea what happened to them, what they're doing now, or I have no thought about that. But that being there, and that was a resistance site, too. It wasn't just sitting around, you know, getting out of L.A. and breathing better air. It certainly was that, but that was a resistance thing, too. And I heard a lot about that it was very big for a lot of those kids, evidently. You know, it was a heck of an experience. Did we get somebody on the air?
Yeah, it's Catherine.
Oh, Catherine, hi there.
Yeah, I thought I'd call and talk to Cricket directly.
Good, okay.
And say what I'm critical of.
Thanks for calling.
All right. I think the main problem I have with skills acquisition really is that I think there's a real danger that unless this society, this civilization is dismantled, primitive skills won't be necessary. There can be an over-reliance or expectation that the system will collapse on its own. Focusing on efforts to acquire skills, waiting for that collapse. And I think that's a huge danger right now, is this kind of lackadaisical, oh, it's unsustainable, it will collapse. And that's not a given. You know, I think that's something it's just an assumption.
Word. Yeah, I hear you. At the same time, I almost feel like the reverse could very well be true. You know, you've got a whole bunch of people who are saying nothing is acceptable other than a complete, you know, physical assault and dismantling of infrastructure of the society, and nothing but that will solve the problems. And that also, you know, encourages passivity. For instance, I'm not doing any of that, you know, and I'm not being on a public radio show on the air. I'm not planning on doing anything like that. So, I mean, it's almost like...
Okay, I'm not talking about public radio shows or whatever. I'm talking about, I think that this civilization has been going on and continues to develop what the acronym that they have, GNR, genetics, robotics, nanotechnology. And I think that primitivists get accused of, you know, you're going to cause a die-off, you want a die-off, your theories imply a die-off. And my perspective is the die-off is now, it's who's doing the counting, okay? The cancers, the heart disease, you know, the causes of death in technological societies are, there's a die-off that's happening right now. And I don't have any reason to believe that it will automatically collapse on its own. I think the building of hermetically sealed environments and roboticization of human beings and this complete degradation of what's been human existence previously is the direction that's in place and being pushed forward. And that's not for the majority of the planet. And it's kind of, to me, there's a real danger to not see understanding and trying to talk amongst people one knows and trusts and talking about the realities and what needs to be done in terms of how do we dismantle this civilization? What do we begin getting rid of? This isn't, you know, it's not going to collapse. This shit ain't, say it collapses overnight. Stuff around.
Hey, Catherine, we can't, we have to be
I'll let you
judicious with our language use.
No, I changed it to stuff. Right. Okay, anyway, I should let you go, but I thought I just should say clearly where I'm coming from.
Yeah, thank you.
I listened to you on the air.
Thank you, yeah. It's a huge topic that we could not possibly unpack in the next 120 seconds that we're on the air. But
All right, bye.
I feel like, yeah, it's a really important topic and a really important issue that you raise, and I guess I just leave it at that without even attempting, you know, some succinct, you know, 90-second response.
All right, okay. I would just say dismantle.
Okay, I didn't have headphones for that, but she just rang off, huh?
Yeah. I didn't hear it either.
No, we were looking at each other. Okay, well. Do you want to say anything at all about it, or just
no?
Leave it at that,
I mean,
like you said?
Other than it's just I guess it's just a matter of us figuring out who we need to be responsible, you know, for. And I mean, personally, I wanna be responsible for myself, and I don't want to be dependent on food from a grocery store. And that to me is my first priority. I mean, it's my number one priority is to break my own personal dependency on this society. From there, we can expand out. I mean, that's the important part to me. And I'm not saying it's that way for everybody. It's just my bodily integrity is first and foremost important to me.
Yeah, we're facing a lot in this struggle. Want to say, Sarah, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
Glad you're going to be around a while.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're just about out of town. I'll be back on the 25th. And maybe I'll be lucky to have some more guests and maybe in Sarah again.
Hi to all of our friends and Suomi.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Teemu ja Miika ja kaikki muut. Moi moi.
Ah, great. Thanks for doing that. All right, see you later.